success with it. It's just, you know, I can't guarantee that every single person that does it is going to knock a home run. But you know what? Most people I know would settle for a triple. I hear David fumbling around with his microphone, so either that's him or Edward Ashoff. We'll find out.
It's Edward is here. I'm just making sure he's – go ahead and test out the mic there, Edward. Let's make sure we can hear you.
Sibilance. Justin, can you hear me?
Sibilance. Edward Ashoff coming in live, loud and clear from Hoover, Alabama.
So you can hear me?
The miracle of modern science. Yes, I can hear you.
There you go.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
You are on with me and Steve Sullivan. Pat Bradley, our normal co-host, is off. Matty T is here as well. Normally he would be calling you or taking your call, but he's – sitting back there doing whatever producers do when they're not talking to ESPN.com writers.
Watching the Kardashians.
Yes.
That's my show, man.
Hey, before we get into football, I do want to talk about football because I know you are a soccer guy. I only follow it during the World Cup, but I did follow your tweets yesterday during the World Cup championship, the final between Argentina and Germany. And, of course, unfortunately for me, Germany was able to come out on top 1-0, and I was rooting for Argentina. I loved little Messi, mostly because I, too, am an undersized fellow who has worked hard to try to be an overachiever.
You are Messi-like.
I am very Messi-like. So, anyway, but it was a great final, certainly, and it went to, of course, extra time, and Germany comes up with the goal they needed. But thoughts on the overall World Cup and the final?
I thought it was great. Tied for the most goals, 171. For everybody who is downing soccer because they don't score a lot, they averaged close to 3 goals a game in this World Cup. And football, they averaged 4 touchdowns a game in the NFL. So it's relatively the same. But I think the biggest thing was, you know, the U.S. generated a ton of attention. They were literally one good kick away from making it. You know, one round further and playing Argentina, which, who knows, with the way the U.S. was playing on offense, well, if they had improved on offense from that Belgium game, they might have been able to sneak one past Argentina because they've done well against teams who have one good guy and then the rest it's kind of herky-jerky. But I think the biggest thing was to get Messi in the finals. Everybody knows who he is. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo playing well, even with a bum knee. The run that Brazil was supposed to have, you know, I think excited people when they lost because everybody was like, wait, I thought this was the best team in the country or best team in the world. Right. Losing Neymar was huge, though. I mean, sure. He's a huge name, and I think losing him was something that kind of knocked things off. But Germany winning was also big because a lot of people just know U.S. soccer and Jurgen Klinsmann, obviously. Germany, I think that really helped.
Leo Messi awarded the Golden Ball Award. Some people are saying maybe not so deserved and was kind of a ploy by FIFA to play off of his name and the fact that he's one of the few guys that even marginal or very, I guess, you know, or even non-soccer fans have some idea who he is. Do you think there was anything inappropriate about that, or there's somebody you would have given it to?
I think it should have been James Rodriguez. He led the World Cup in goals. He scored in every game that he was in. There was nobody out there better than him, I think, in any game that he was in any other game in the World Cup. Neymar, if he had kept playing, probably would have won it because of the way that he had scored goals and the way that he looked and took over games when he could. I don't think Messi took any games over. We didn't see vintage Messi this year. And clearly, I mean, that final free kick, you know, I've played all my life. It's tough, but that was just an awful, awful touch. And he
should
had
he
some
have done
bad touches on good chances in that game. I would have given James Rodriguez.
Should he have done something? So they were arguing on there, making the point on the broadcast, and again, I'm an ignoramus when it comes to soccer and a lot of other things for that matter, that he should have tried to do something different. They thought it was somewhat selfish for him to try to make a goal from as far out as he was. Do you feel like he should have done something different there?
No way. I mean, he's one of the best kicks, one of the best free kicks out there. I mean, I would probably say that Cristiano Ronaldo has the best, but Messi, he is a wonder with the ball. Anything that he does, you can't question. Okay. I think that he's either on point or he's not. And really, what else is he going to do in that situation? They hadn't really been doing well in set pieces all tournament. He's probably your best chance against a guy like Neuer, who I also think should have been in the running for the Golden Ball, for the Golden Boot, but At the end of the day, you don't question what Messi does. He's the best player in the world.
So Rodriguez wins the Golden Boot Award from Colombia. You've got the German goalkeeper won the Golden Glove Award, which, you know, talking All-Star game, too, that's a totally different deal. And I do want to give a tip of the cap to Colombia, which won basically Miss Congeniality. also known as the Fair Play Award, goes to the team with the tournament's best disciplinary record. It's like, who cares?
Least yellow cards, or
I guess, or maybe
it's the Lady Bing trophy.
Yeah, fewest offsides. I don't know what the
deal
is.
How important was it for soccer, though, to end the World Cup on a good goal, where a guy off his chest and kicks it in, which in you realize the talent. Now, when you look in the highlights, it's no big deal, but think of the moment. Yeah. And you're thinking about, you know, collecting it in your chest, put it to your left leg, and bang it in the corner of the net. Well,
and the other thing is the goal comes from a guy who was a substitute in for the leading goal scorer in the history of the World Cup.
Yeah. And he had his jerseys burned when he left his club team to go to Bayern.
How's he a substitute like with that kind of talent?
Well, I'm pretty sure maybe Germany's really deep. This is just in. Götze, right? Is that his last name?
Yeah, Götze.
But that's
like
the goal you're going to see for 4 years.
Touching a goal.
You're right. Did you see... On a totally different but related note, did you see the picture of him that it was on Deadspin this morning?
No, I didn't.
There's a picture of him and his, I don't know if it's his girlfriend or fiance or wife. I think it's his girlfriend or fiance. They're on a boat. He's in a Speedo, and he's very happy to be there. Let me just put it to you that way. It's one of the most awkward shots I've ever seen. And I'm thinking, bro, can we get you some trunks or maybe some Umbros, anything?
But he'll never have to buy another thing in Germany for the rest of his life.
That's for sure. He should be doing a Speedo ad. That's
He's
all
a
I
national
know.
Hero.
Yes, he is. All right, well, let's talk football. Not football anymore. We were talking about the lack of star power. Do you agree, or are we missing something?
I think overall, I mean, you don't have any polarizing figures here outside of coaches, obviously. But when it comes to players, there's no Johnny Manziel. There's no Jadeveon Clowney. You have Todd Gurley, who I think is the best running back in the country, but he's not a huge talker. He's not somebody who's going to really push the needle with anything that he says. He's just kind of a humble guy who goes about his business. Nick Marshall isn't here, which I think is a mistake.
Yeah, what happened there?
You know, this is a perfect opportunity for a guy who you want to showcase as a Heisman Trophy candidate to get out and own up to his mistakes. I mean, this is strike two against him. Why not put him out here and have him, you know, say what he needs to say?
Yeah, I don't think that's Gus,
though.
I think Gus likes to control the message.
But I think it's a mistake. I think that if this guy is going to be a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate, if he's a guy you want to put as the face of your program and hopefully the face of the conference, he's got to own up to this. He's going to have to answer those questions eventually. Johnny Manziel showed up. I mean, I know that he didn't break the law at all last summer, but he took on the media throng and he handled it like a champ. I know that Nick Marshall isn't a guy like Johnny Manziel who talks a lot, but this is a perfect opportunity. You just keep the story going by not having him here and having Gus Malzahn answer for him and having his players answer for him. I just
because he's gonna have to answer
I think
the
this is a chance for him.
See, if you
why
bring
not,
him,
but why not do it now?
I agree. If you bring him in,
forget about
you're
it.
Right, and get it over with. By the time the season starts, people will be talking about something else because now he's gonna have to answer those questions on his own campus.
Yeah, I don't know if they want him to be the face of the program.
Maybe not. That could be. I would disagree with one thing, although I think Gurley is, of all the guys there, certainly the most likely to be in the mix for the Heisman Trophy. I would say the best running back in the SEC. I have a love affair going with Derrick Henry, as much as I hate to admit it. Watching that guy in the bowl game in a losing effort last year, he looks like one of those top five all-time potential running backs in SEC history. He is freakish. I don't know how much Yeldon's presence there will take away from his number of carries, but the guy just looks like he's playing a completely different game.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to be the most talented running back in the SEC this year, and I've said it all along. By the midway point of the season, I'd be shocked if he wasn't the starter. The thing about Yeldon is, yes, he's good. He's a dynamic guy. He can break the big runs. He can run between the tackles, but he has a fumbling problem, and we all know Nick Saban. You start turning the ball over, you're going to lose carries, and the fact that he knows what Derrick Henry can do, That's every more reason for him to put him into that game. Kenyon Drake, he's had his off-field issues. Now he's in the doghouse. Derrick Henry has every chance this year to take that spot. And the way that he plays, I mean, he's like a Mack truck. He can run right into you or he can run around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's just one game. It was Oklahoma. It was at the end of the year. But it's going to be exciting to see what he does. And he had a great spring. I mean, he shed some weight and then gained back some muscle. He looked more agile. The coaches were even more pleased with him after the spring than they were after the bowl game. So
that's scary.
It's going to be scary.
Yeah.
What Alabama has is unfair. Let's just say
that. There you go. Edward Ashoff, ESPN.com, joining us. He's an SEC blogger for the website. We were talking about coordinators earlier, too, and we got a chance to meet Roper last year, Kurt Roper, who is now formerly with Duke, now with Florida, trying to revive the offense down there at your alma mater. And then you got Lane Kiffin over at Alabama in the Western Division. So a couple of coordinators who will be getting a lot of attention this coming season.
Yeah, and I think that the biggest thing for Kurt Roper is he's a guy who plays to his player's strengths, and he has a quarterback who's run sort of what he ran at Duke. Jeff Driskel ran more of a spread in high school. He's a spread quarterback. He loves running that zone read, which is what they're going to do. He loves the hurry up. This is exactly what he needs to kind of bounce back after that injury. I think Kelvin Taylor is going to have a big year for him. He slimmed down this spring. He's more agile. He's faster, but he's also stronger. So I think that those are two big important parts. Then the big question is who's going to catch balls for him. I think DeMarcus Robinson, if he can keep his head on straight off the field, he's going to be a big-time player for him. He's the most dynamic receiver that they have. And then getting McGee in from Virginia at the tight end spot is clutch. I think that he might be the X factor on offense right now because he's a game-changer with his speed and athleticism, but he's also a big blocker. He's a guy who wants to catch a lot of passes, but he also wants to block and help. So that's really going to be big. The big thing for Florida's offense is they have to have more confidence, but they have to throw the ball downfield. They have to be a threat in the passing game, or no one's going to respect them. That's what we saw last year. And I just don't think that they have the bruiser that they had in Mike Gillisley from 2 years ago to be able to rely heavily on the running game. But the advantage that they're going to have is they're going to be able to run more of that zone read like they did a couple of years ago when they won 11 games. And I think for Lane Kiffin, it's all about can he get explosive plays out of the passing game, regardless of who's a quarterback. I mean, I think everybody kind of knows it's going to be Jacob Coker. But when you have Amari Cooper, when you have O.J. Howard, when you have DeAndre White, Christian Jones, Chris Black, you're going to be able to throw all day. It doesn't matter. Justin, you could be the quarterback, and they'd be fine throwing the ball. That's how talented they are at receiver. I think they're good in the offensive line.
I am a great
athlete. They lost some guys. Lane Kiffin's job is easy. He's just going to what he wants to do is get more explosive plays out of the passing game and have more of a downfield threat that we really haven't seen from Alabama in the last few years because Nick Saban loves to run the ball, and they're going to do a bunch of that. But I think you're going to see a more wide-open offense with Lane Kiffin.
I am one of the very few people who have a tendency to doubt Auburn right now, and maybe I'm an idiot. It's definitely been argued before. Who do you see winning the West, and how close to what they did last year do you think Auburn can be this year?
I think the thing about Auburn is, can the defense improve? And if it can, then Auburn is going to be just as scary as it was last year. I think the offense is going to be fine. You lose Trey Mason, who, you know, was better than Bo Jackson in one single season. But they're going to run it with three guys. I mean, I think Corey Grant's a good running back, Cameron Artis Payne, the freshman that they have, Racine Thomas, he's a guy who might be the best running back that they have, but he hasn't played yet. So they're going to be able to hand the ball. That's not going to be a problem. They're going to do the zone read. That was their bread and butter last year. They're going to throw the ball because I think DeQuil Williams is really he's kind of that diamond in the rough. He's coming from the JUCO ranks, but you know, I talked to somebody on the staff who said he could have a Jameis Winston-like impact on this offense. He's that talented. I think he's going to make Nick Marshall that much better. And he spent a lot of the spring throwing the ball. Now, the legal issues, obviously, I don't think it's going to come out to be a really big deal for him. But he's going to have the distraction of that weighing on him until he talks about it and until he really gets into a game. But I do think that their offense is going to be fine. It's going to be, can they stop the run? And if Carl Lawson can't play, that's big. And can they stop the pass? And that's two big things. That's two out of three things that you have to be able to do on defense. And can they force turnovers? They didn't do a lot of that last year. Ellis Johnson is really confident in the development that he's seen from this defense. But he wants to see it, you know, outside of practice. He wants to see it in games, and it's going to start early for him. But I think that's the biggest pressure for him. If they can get things done on defense, yeah, then they're going to have a chance to repeat. Their schedule doesn't help them, though.
Auburn was wedged between Western Michigan and Toledo in total defense last year at number 86 in the country. And admittedly, they played a tough schedule, but, yeah, that does not exactly bode well. I think they caught lightning in a bottle. I thought, yeah, last year was a really amazing year. I still expect them to be towards the top, you know, two or three in the SEC West, but I don't expect them to be in the college football playoff. How many teams do you think will be in the Final Four from the SEC this year?
I think just one. Okay. And the reason for it is I don't see anybody coming out of the SEC with less than two losses. I just – even Alabama, who I think is the best team in the SEC right now with the guys that they return, it's going to be the schedules and the amount of talent that all the top teams have. I mean, the SEC West, you have five teams that could legitimately win the West. In the East, it's more of a crapshoot because you don't know what the top three teams are going to do, and then you have Missouri there, and you're wondering, well, what's the defense going to be like? What's the leadership going to be like? So I don't think anybody from the East right now really has what it takes to make it to the playoff. Last year I didn't think Missouri would have a chance to win the SEC East. I thought they'd be the most improved team, but I didn't think they'd win the East. So I'm probably going to be wrong like I am every year.
Well, Missouri, Missouri definitely jumped up. Auburn jumped up last year. The more I talk to people, Mississippi State to me could be that team this year where they sort of rise up and sort of not shock the world because we know they've got a lot of talent coming back, but they could take that huge step forward this year.
Yeah, 18 starters return, most underrated defense in the SEC. Look what they did in the second half of the season on defense. Phenomenal, even though they didn't win a lot of games. I like Dak Prescott, but he's got to prove that he's not a flash-in-the-pan quarterback. And that's what Dan Mullen told me. He's like, listen, I know that he did well in those last couple of games, but he was inconsistent all year. He's got to learn how to take three steps and throw the ball. But he has a chance to be really good.
Yeah.
Nick Robinson, that's the guy. He's going to be fun to watch at running back for Mississippi State. And their top five receivers come back. So I like what Mississippi State can do this year.
Yeah, I'm way excited about seeing a lot of these players. Unfortunately, most of them play for SEC West teams, which does not bode well for Arkansas. How many wins are you projecting for Arkansas at this point?
Right now.
Can I get SEC win? SEC win? One?
I think they could do it. I know it sounds really bad to have to sit there and think. I would probably go 4 or 5 wins. I was talking to somebody the other day about it. I just want to know, is this team ready to play Brett Bielema football? Are they tough enough up front? Are they going to be tough enough on the offensive line and the defensive line consistently every game? You know, can Brandon Allen really take the next step? Who's he going to throw to outside of Hunter Henry? Is Alex Collins ready to be the guy? Because I like what Jonathan Williams can do. I mean, if he's starting over Alex Collins, it's not a big deal because he's a really good running back. But Collins gives you something else. He's more of a dynamic runner. But can he be that guy consistently? Because his numbers really dropped off during the second half of the season. And, you know, can they stop anyone on defense? I think that their mentality is tougher now than it was last year. But they've got to be physically tougher. I mean, they got pushed around for most of the season. And you just can't do that in the SEC. And I know that it's tough when you're trying to build a completely different system on both sides, but you can't get caught looking in the SEC, and Arkansas has got to make strides this year or else you just don't know which direction they're going to go.
I'm with you. Need a bunch of guys that want to punch first and ask questions later.
Exactly.
All right, Edward, great stuff. I wish we could talk more, but we are up against it. Thanks so much for the time. We'll be visiting with Edward throughout the season. And again, you better start working on that new open song, big guy.
Oh, I've already got it in my head.
Okay.
I already know what I'm coming out to.
Well, let me know, because we're going to keep it off the record for now, because I want to surprise everybody when we start that. It's always kind of our deal. Edward pick his own open music, Sully.
Okay.
Because he's big time. That's how they do it.
It won't be Let It Go from Frozen.
Oh, I was hoping.
It's not going to be Frozen.
Well, there are a lot of great songs on that soundtrack. You can pick any number of songs, so maybe it's just something else.
It's the only one I know.
Okay, well, me too, actually. But all right, Edward, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Enjoy it.